Commissioner of Finance, Tom Hansen, and we asked him then if he would be willing to come and make a few comments before the conference committee, and he's agreed to do that, and he's here. So, Commissioner Hansen, if you would come forward, and what I would like the members of the conference committee to do is kind of view this as an attempt by the members of the conference committee and the administration and the commissioner representing them to begin a dialogue that will hopefully take place over the next several days as we put the bill together, so that we can maybe begin from points of agreement and build from there and see what the end product is. But I'm a strong believer in having a conversation and opportunity for input, and we'll just have to see where that ultimately leads us. But welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, thank you for your invitation, and I'm glad to be here. I just want to let you know, on behalf of the governor, we're willing to work with you any way that we can. I think this process works better when we set common goals and processes like these, common numbers, and work towards achieving results. I can't speak to a lot of the individual provisions of the bill, but in my role as Commissioner of Finance, I just have some observations on the overall macro picture. I think there is a tremendous amount of commonality in the ways we have approached. There's more we have in common in getting to the $939 million number than we have differences. Just some points to some of my observations as I looked at your, the House and the Senate position and the governor's position. We both, all three of us use a number of use one-time resources. We take it from different places, but if you think of it as a 939 problem, we have in common at least $515 million of the 939 in one-time resources. We use ours as a combination of the Health Care Access Fund and the Budget Reserve, and the House and the Senate use it as it use the take the cash flow account, which is problematic for us, but certainly we'll talk about it, and then elements of the Budget Reserve. So there's at least $515 million of commonality in those positions. And then you look at other, there's about four revenue raisers that, revenue enhancements, whatever you want to call them, the bank data matches, mutual fund registration fee, the PUC transfer, and the Workforce Development Fund transfer that we all have in common. The TANF refinancing, we took most of the TANF to refinance. Both bodies took about half of it. There are areas where we're not as close. One more area we're close, the tax area. We, all three of us, have provisions on the foreign operating corporations. The governor and his recommendations balances the FOC provision out with a sales tax reduction. And then some areas that I've noticed that were not as close. As I mentioned, the both of you take the cash flow account, certainly something we'll talk to you about. House and the governor take 250 in the budget reserve. The Senate takes 100. And then our human services cuts, we're at 262 by our numbers. The House is at 130. The Senate's at 143. And Senate uses June accelerated to a greater extent, and the statewide property tax. All in all, there is more commonality in our positions, and in my mind, coming up with a macro solution is one issue. And then I have not addressed the there's the various initiatives that are in your bills or initiatives of the governor's that need to be addressed. And then there are policy and other non-money related issues that we will have to work through. Closing, Mr. Chairman, look forward to working with you and members of the committee.
OK. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Hansen, obviously we've had the chairman and I have had some productive conversations with you over these last several days, and appreciate your coming tonight to offer just a few minutes of perspective. We recognize there, as you suggest, a lot of commonality. Certainly there are some significant differences, but the fact that you're willing to sit down and talk to us will hopefully allow us to work through that. So certainly appreciate your allowing us to get off on this start tonight with those comments.
Okay. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We didn't quite get through our afternoon agenda, and I want to thank Representative Paymar for sitting patiently and are not quite getting to his part of the agenda, and Senator Foley as well. So that's our next area, and if you'd begin to walk through, I'm not sure who wants to go first, Representative Foley Senator Foley or Representative Paymar.
Senator Higgins also.
Well, that's right. Senator Higgins is part of this one as well. Excuse me. Okay.
Senator Foley's piece is the first piece in the article, though.
Okay. So I'll just look to you, you two to kind of coordinate that. Then shall we begin with Senator Foley? Or
yeah, I would ask that Mr. Representative Paymar doesn't want to do it. Why I'll have Chris Turner do it.
We're ready. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Go ahead. Mr. Chair, I'll go through the spreadsheet real quickly here, and Gary Karger, the fiscal analyst, will, if there's any questions, especially on the tails, we'll be happy to respond. Let me say that we, the courts, the Supreme Court, we had a reduction of 1.99%. Civil Legal Services, a 0.96 reduction. The Court of Appeals, we had a 1.33 reduction, and a reduction from the district courts of 1.2%, and the public defense, a cut of 2.43%. And members of the committee, you probably have heard from the courts, regardless of what district you're in, about the financial situation that they face. They state that they have a $13 million shortfall based on the budget we passed last year. So we tried to cushion the cuts as much as possible to the courts to so that's the court's part of the budget. Quickly then to public safety, there is a $360,000 appropriation. That's a match for disasters. Under the BCA, we did make some reductions to CRIMNET, but that will not jeopardize the live scan project. We have some rider. We made some overall agency-wide reductions, fairly minor, to public safety. And we did. If you notice on the on your House bill, that there is some rider language that requests that the Office of Justice programs not be cut, or the BCA agents. However, in light of the fact that the bonding bill now has the Anoka Forensic Lab, I think we really don't need that language protecting the BCA agents, and we could probably let the BCA decide what to do, since that has now been opened up to statewide competition for forensic labs around the state. You will see under the fire marshal account, this is not something that we wanted to do. It's not something that I like to do, but we did take $2 million from the fire marshal account. Under the Office of Justice programs, I know we did this differently, but I would hope that we would not cut crime victim services. The governor had made a recommendation of $653,000 in cuts, and after the devastating cuts of 2003, I think we basically brought them up to made them whole last year, and I would hope that we would not cut the crime victims programs. We did cut the squad car technology upgrades, and under the post board, this is a correction, a $50,000 mistake that was made. The Human Rights Department, we followed the governor's recommendation. There's a 3.99% cut. In corrections, we made cuts in operations, but did not make any cuts in institutions. And that's a 1.94% reduction. We did not cut as much to reducing reimbursement for short-term offenders. This, of course, will hopefully, if we can maintain that number, it will not be so painful on our counties that have to make up this difference. We followed the recommendations of the sentence to serve program, those cuts that the governor recommended. So that's basically it. Let me just close by saying, Mr. Chair and members, that I see that, if you want to call this our target for cuts between the Senate and the House, were significantly different. And it's my belief that that public safety is a core government function. And if we were to have to abide by the number that the Senate was given to cut, I think that we would jeopardize public safety. And that's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll start then with Senator Foley and/or.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm going to do is give you a couple items that are on this that deal with things that you did not cover. The first one it relates to credit card transactions, and that. On page R12A7, and what currently is happening is that the courts are losing approximately $400,000 a year in credit card convenience fees, and the administrative department and branch agencies have a means to assess a fee that that covers that transaction. An example would be the DNR receives a $3.50 convenience fee when you order a license online and so forth. And the next relates to the criminal surcharge. And we did, in fact, offer a $3 raise for these things in the courthouse. And what I'm concerned about is that we are continuing to use fees and really not I think it's a terrible way to do business, and perhaps in the scheme of things here we may be able to make changes that reduce the cost there, but absent that, well, I want you to know that we're laying this out in front so you can see that we did raise money on that amount. And I thank you on that.
And Mr. Turner, do you have anything to add relative to
Mr. Chairman, as Representative Paymar pointed out, the House target was reduction target was $11 million, and the Senate was $19.2 million. So we do have a number of other line items. If you'd like me to go through the spreadsheet and point out the differences, that I'd be happy to.
That would be the intent at this point, then.
Okay.
If you could go ahead, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, we'll start page one of the spreadsheet. In many respects, the House and the Senate agreed, but I'll point those out anyway, as I go down. For example, Supreme Court operations, the House has a reduction of $650,000, the Senate $652,000, relatively identical. Civil legal services, the House has a reduction of $128,000, the Senate $100,000. Difference here is the House carries that out in 10, 11 tails, and the Senate does not. So you have a total Supreme Court difference of $778,000 in reductions for the House and $752,000 for the Senate. Court of Appeals, the House cuts $141,000, the Senate $213,000. The District Courts, the House cuts $2,608,000 and the Senate cuts $3,484,000. So that's quite a significant difference of almost $9,000. There is a rider in the Senate bill that gives the District Courts complete discretion on where they want to take those cuts, and that was in because we gave them specific or we authorized them to specifically fund the drug courts last year. This will give them the authority to take some of the cuts from the drug courts. Public Defense Board, the House reduced their appropriation $1,690,000, the Senate $1,391,000. That is it for the Senate Judiciary article. I'll move into public safety now and go over that very quick. The House and the Senate both met, and the governor, all three made the $360,000 appropriation for the state match for the 2006 Red River Valley flood. House and the Senate both concurred with the governor on the chemical assessment team hazmat reimbursement changes. That's a reduction of $40,000 from the base. The reimbursements will still be made, but they'll be billed back to the companies that were responsible for the incidents. Then the Senate has an operating reduction within Homeland Security and Emergency Management of $36,000. And it's a Senate-only provision. If we move over to the BCA, the House cut CrimNet by $608,000, and then their tails come out at $817,000 in 10 and 11. The Senate cut it by $1 million with $1 million in tails in 10 and 11. Then the Senate has a BCA operations reduction. It's a Senate-only provision of $659,000. Then this is placed within the BCA because they're the largest division within the Department of Public Safety, but the House has a $100,000 general agency-wide reduction that is ongoing in 10 and 11. The Senate has a $150,000 agency-wide reduction with no tails. Then in the fire marshal account, identical, $2 million each. House takes and accounts for it in 09, the Senate in 08 and 09. Then we have an alcohol and gambling enforcement with that division, a general reduction of $24,000. Within Office of Justice Programs, the Senate concurred with the House position that they didn't want to reduce crime victim services. So that line is blank. We also didn't want to stipulate that Financial Crimes Task Force or squad car technology upgrades be necessarily targeted for a cut. What the Senate did instead is made a general reduction to grants within the Office of Justice Programs of $622,000 and left it up to the discretion of the agency as to where they wanted to cut that. We move down to the post board that was already covered by Representative Paymar, then human rights, a fairly identical cut, $149,000 in the House and $112,000 in the Senate. And then we move to corrections. Probably the biggest difference in the bill is the Senate made an operating reduction to the institutions division of $4,281,000. The governor and the House both held institutions harmless. We moved to community services. The House reduced the reimbursement for short-term offenders by $1,500,000. The Senate reduced it a little bit less, $1,250,000. Both the House and the Senate agreed with the governor's position on reducing sentencing to service by $600,000. And then, once again, the Senate made an operating, it's a Senate-only provision, an operating reduction within the department or within the Division of Community Services of $1,568,000. And the House did not make that cut. Then in operations support, the House cut the operations support division by $344,000 and the Senate by $181,000. Those are the differences in the spreadsheet. Then I guess while I'm at it, I'll go through the four four language sections in the Senate bill that have that are somewhat different. The first is the fire safety account in the special revenue fund. What the House did is its rider is on page R4, 225.1 to 225.3 in the side-by-side. The House puts it in session law, just a rider in session law. What the Senate did is on page R10 is we made a statutory change to Minnesota Statutes 297I.06, which is the statute that mandates the transfer. And if you remember, the general fund transfer is there because we repealed the fire insurance tax in 2006 and replaced it with the fire insurance surcharge, which was levied on all homeowners' policies and commercial fire policies. So it's bringing in a lot more money than the tax did because we broadened the base. As Representative Paymar pointed out, that account has three priorities. First of all, the general fund transfer, which is mandatory. Then funding the Office of the State Fire Marshal base, which is $2.8 million, and that's mandatory. And then the remainder of that account goes towards fire training and education. And that is where the $2 million that we transfer here will be coming from. It'll be coming out of the training and education of firefighters. And the next
so there's no money left.
Section 7 and 8 of the Senate, Senator Foley pointed this out, Section 7 increases the criminal traffic surcharge from $72 to $75, and Section 8 allocates the increase to the general fund. Then Section 9 in the Senate, as Senator Foley also pointed out, authorizes the court to charge a convenience fee for payment of fees, fines, and surcharges by credit card online. And I'd like to point out the revenue is then retained by the court that imposes the fee. Section 10 in the Senate, the last language provision, repeals the current statute authorizing the payment of fines, fees, and surcharges by credit card in the court system. That is superseded by Section 9, and if Section 9 passes, it would be obsolete. And that is the Senate section of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Turner, could you go back to that firefighter training money again? All the $2 million is out of the firefighter training?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, yes, the only difference is what the Senate does is transfers $1 million in fiscal year 08, which means between now and July. And that million will be taken out of the present allocation. We set up the legislature set up a fire services advisory board 2 years ago that decides what or how those monies are going to be spent after we've made the general fund transfer and then funded the fire marshal's base. So the Senate takes $1 million out of the 08 allocation and $1 million out of the 09 allocation. What the House does is takes it doesn't touch the 08 allocation. But it takes $2 million out of the 09 allocation. I think either way is fair enough. In fiscal year 2008, we're only collecting the surcharge for three quarters. So we'll be bringing in approximately $6 million. In fiscal year 09, we're collecting for all four quarters. We'll bring in about $8 million. And so, you know, whichever way you wanted to go, either, you know, one in one or two in the second year, would be fine.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Turner, you're not nicking the fire marshal at all then? You didn't take any percentage off the base of the fire marshal?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, no. The fire marshal's base is sacrosanct. We cannot touch that. Okay. The only monies we could spend would be excess monies that would go to the Fire Services Advisory Board to be allocated. And some of that allocation will be to the fire marshal for additional training and education. But the base we can't touch.
Is that it, Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymer?
Mr. Chair, I also neglected, there is some language in the bill that I neglected to, in my presentation. On page R6, there is a language that deals with sex offenders and the ability of sex offenders who are petitioned for commitment to remain in a Department of Corrections or county facility, and there's a cost savings, and that was the purpose for this language. And on page R13, there's language regarding a working group on controlled substances, and this is going to be conducted by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, and I failed to bring those up.
Thank you. Senator Higgins?
And, Mr. Chair, the Senate has a similar but not exact section on the civil commitment of sex offenders, and it's in the Health and Human Services article. Neither of these is quite right, and I think there's been some work to try to marry the two and put them somewhere all together when the time comes. But it affects both human services and the corrections budgets, and so we've been working with at least two hats on this.
So the two of you are working on that?
And Senator Berglund.
And Senator Berglund.
And the counties and a whole bunch of other folks.
So we'll have to rely on you folks kind of getting that worked out then, is what you're saying.
We'll try to do our best.
Anything else that you have then, Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, as you probably could see in our division, we're very heavily weighted toward one department. The Department of Corrections is about 83-84% of our division's entire budget, and that is reflected, I think, in the cuts that we did. They probably got 67-70% of the cuts, and they are the biggest piece of our division.
Okay. Any further comments then from the senators or staff?
Chairman, I think it's fair to say that this judiciary and the public safety part of the budget have significant problems. It's a highly staff level, so that any kinds of cuts, why it means that you're cutting staff and or not hiring them in some cases. So it's a situation now where in the judiciary, at least, there's significant problems with the staffing and the shortage of money. And, we did what we could with the monies that we were given, but Representative Paymar is saying, I suspect that he sees the same tough situation. And thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Representative Osman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, going with the Senate on R-15, there's a repealer. I was wondering if you mentioned that, I missed it.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members. Yeah, the repealer, what it does is it repeals current law that authorizes the courts to allow payment of fines, fees, and surcharges by credit cards. And the section before that in the Senate also authorizes courts, or restates that authorization, and includes a provision that allows them to levy a convenience charge for online credit card payments. And so if Section 9 becomes law, the repealer, the current law, would then be obsolete, and so that's why the repealer's there.
Okay. Well, thank you. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just ask a question of my successor once removed, if that would be possible.
I think we could entertain a question from the co-chair, yes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Representative Paymar, you made the comment just that you thought the Senate bill was a little bit heavy in terms of public safety, and obviously we'll have a chance to discuss this in somewhat greater detail as this conference committee proceeds, so I'm not asking for a half-hour answer, but just can you just indicate briefly why you think that there's a real threat to public safety with the Senate position?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I think that we have to look at the, for instance, when I think of the corrections budget that we're seeing, even though we rank 49th out of 50th in terms of incarceration rates, we've seen a huge spike in inmates in our state prisons. We're already double bunking in Stillwater in jail cells that should not be double bunked. I, quite frankly, am worried about the safety of our guards in our institutions if we make the kinds of cuts that are being recommended here. I certainly think that on the top, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Corrections, and the other divisions under the purview of this committee, there could be some minor cuts. But to cut corrections to this level, I think, is too high. And to continue to cut courts at levels recommended, you're going to see courts shutting down. The caseloads are already high, and justice will be denied. I mean, if you want me to go through each area, I will. But I think this is very problematic.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, no, I appreciate that, and that I think answers my question to the extent that your concern is primarily the corrections budget. Your concern is not, say, police on the street, firefighters. The concern is within the penal system of Minnesota, and I'm not suggesting that doesn't have an impact on public safety, but I wanted to just make sure that I understood the context in which you made the comment. I would also offer that, disagree that this is on both sides, tough budget. We face a very tough situation. I will suggest that at least insofar as the cuts to the court budget. I think with the district courts, there's a slightly higher cut on the Senate side. Otherwise, I think we're pretty similar, separate from the district courts. So, but obviously, we'll have a chance to talk about this in somewhat greater detail.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. And we're going to go to the environmental section next. And Representative Wagenius, your counterpart in the Senate has a scheduling problem. Would it be all right if she does hers first and takes us through both the spreadsheets and the side-by-side? And then we'll go to both. Where is Hilti here? Oh, okay.
All those public safety people can go now?
No, I think the courts really are jeopardized.
Guys, we're fast. Yeah.
Representative Wagenius, I was just informed that Representative Hilti also has a scheduling issue, so maybe he can do his part.
Absolutely.
Being that you're here anyway, if you don't mind. We're just trying to accommodate as many people as we can. Thank you. Senator Anderson, if you would like to begin and... hopefully we'll get you out of here so you can be at your appointment on time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that. I do have to speak in my district. I'm going to try to stay as long as I can so I can hear as much of the presentation as possible, but I do have to leave in a little bit less than an hour, so I appreciate that. I just wanted to make a couple of general comments about an overview of our proposal in the Senate. And then we'll let Mr. Mueller and Mr. Knopf go through the spreadsheet and any language issues in detail. As you know, in the Senate, my bill covers both environment and natural resources as well as the energy portion of commerce. So we have commerce split into two different divisions. And so I just will talk about the energy portion of commerce in my bill. We had a, between those two sections, I had a $13 million cut target, roughly, just a little over $13 million of cuts. In general, I guess what I'll describe is how our budget differs from the governor's, in because I think that's the easiest way to describe the cuts that we did and didn't do. We did not accept governor's recommendations for cuts in parks, state, regional, or metro parks, in the Clean Water Legacy Program. We didn't accept cuts. We did no cuts to invasive species programs, to prairie or wetland protection programs. We did not cut Let's Go Fishing, and we did not cut hunter education, and that's in the environment and natural resources side. We did accept some of the governor's recommended cuts beyond those areas. And we did bring in some revenue in two areas, primarily in the environment side from some water fees, where we did increase some water fees for use of large quantities of water for those who use more than 1 million gallons of water at a time. We made a moderate increase in those annual, I think they're annual fees. And we, as you'll hear, Mr. Mueller can talk about that, but we looked at what the cost of the program is, the permit program in the Department of Natural Resources, and these increases still don't reach the cost of the permitting program. And so it's a step towards covering, having the program cover its own costs. But it really is a modest increase, and that raises about $500,000 of general fund. The other areas that where we cut beyond where the governor was recommending, we took those larger cuts from the energy side, mostly because there were some large increases last session, and we took some of the increases. So we did cut. The governor had recommended cutting the hydrogen program. We took a little bit deeper cut than the governor had recommended in that program, I think $200,000 more. And we also cut the second year of the E85 pump grants. And the reason for doing that, well, none of these cuts are easy or desirable, but in the E85 pump grant program, what we learned is that, well, we put $1.5 million per year into that program of new money last year, which was a very, very significant increase, far more than their annual appropriation had been on any previous year, many times more. And they've used about a third of their 2008 appropriation to date. So we thought it was safe to cut the second year and still maintain a good degree of ability to expand the program in the rest of the biennium. We have very few spending items in the bill. We have some flood response cost share money to Bowser. We fund the board for the Star Lakes program. We put the forest fragmentation study in here, and that's $53,000. We have some My Green Jobs initiatives, and that includes some dollars that are allocated from previously made appropriations to commerce. So we're taking some of the money that was allocated last year for the plug-in hybrid vehicle task force and related studies, and so we're funding the market analysis under the Green Jobs programs through that. We did also fund a sustainability study for the biodiesel program through commerce, and that would be basically used to fund a low carbon fuel standards study at the University of Minnesota, or to help fund that. And then we did add some of the new gas tax money we did appropriate into more ATV trail maintenance and rehab, some a little bit to new trails, and some to local enforcement through the sheriffs. And that's most of the language I've covered. I'll just briefly tell you what the language items are. This Senator Saxhog's forestry bill, some governor's recommendation about eliminating duplicate reports, the Star Lake program language is in here. That goes along with that appropriation, the language related to those water fees that I mentioned. We do have a section on requiring the Department of Natural Resources to do rulemaking by the end of the next biennium, by 2011, related to structures in water like docks. And finally, the language related to the Green Jobs Initiative that I mentioned. So that's really what's in the bill, and we'll let Mr. Mueller go through the spreadsheet in detail.
Mr. Mailer?
If there's no questions.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm working off the spreadsheet. It's called Environment and Energy Supplemental Budget. And right now, I'll probably focus on the column R where we have differences between the House and the Senate. I won't go through every cut. Senator Anderson already mentioned a number of them. The first difference, line 61, the Senate did a $250,000 one-time cut for land asset management. The next difference is there's a House provision.
Mr. Chairman, I think line 64.
Yes.
The House position. The House, what the House is doing here is reducing the general
fund appropriation to the DNR for permit activity, and then there's a corresponding increase for permit activity out of the Natural Resource Fund that is brought into the fund by some fees on mining companies.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the next item the Senate has on line 65 is $66,000 ongoing decrease due to there's some language in the land consolidation bill from Senator Saxhog that the DNR with the fiscal note said would save them a little bit of money. So we booked that savings here and have it as ongoing savings.
Mr. Chairman, the next item of differences is $65,000. The House, what's here is the House has taken a reduction in the Mississippi Headwaters grant in 09 and carried it out in 010 and 11. The Senate does not. On line 68, the same position regarding Leech Lake grants, no reduction in Leech Lake grants. Line 69, House, for the current or the 08-09 biennium, House and Senate have the same position, a $22,000 cut. There's a slight difference in the out years in the amount of the cuts. Line 70 is the Red River flood damage. Same reduction in both sides in the current biennium. Once again, though, the House has a bigger reduction in the out years. The next item, line 71, is a House-only reduction of $98,000 in the clean water legacy operations in the DNR waters. Then there are 72 is the administrative penalty order. That was a governor's recommendation. Both the Senate and the House have no dollars on that. Line 73 is a study, the forest industry parcelization study, $53,000, same position on both sides. That's the truth. Mr. Chairman, the next item is an interagency information co-op grant. The House has funded that at $197,000. The Senate it has no funding for that item. The county forest land inventory, governor's proposal, neither side funded. Line 76, the park operations reduction, $220,000, same on both sides. The trails operation, neither side took the governor's funding reduction recommendation. Next item, I believe, is the Senate reduction.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a one-time partial reduction with the non-motorized forest rec trails. This was an initiative from last year, and this is just a partial reduction of their funding for that of minus $50,000. This was the governor's initiative. The House did not do. The next item is a $329,000 reduction at both the House and Senate and came from the governor's recommendation for fish and wildlife operations. The next item that's a reduction on all sides is the Minnesota Shooting Sports Center. Except for the House and the Senate did it the same but differs from the governor. The governor made it a $46,000 reduction and then eliminated it in the tails. Looks like the House and the Senate and the House just made it a $46,000 reduction ongoing. So there would still be some money left in the tails for this proposal, about $54,000 per year. The licensing reduction of $52,000 was a governor's initiative that the House and the Senate are both carrying.
The next item on line 83 is a House reduction to the Prairie Wetlands Program in the DNR from the general fund of $200,000. There is a corresponding increase from the natural resources or from non-general fund money for that to make up that reduction. The next items, There were no changes recommended. The governor's recommendations were not taken by either side, all the way down to line 87. Line 87 was in the Eco-Services Division. The governor had a recommended cut of 482. There's a slight difference in the House and Senate position, a $30,000 difference in the cut. Line 88 is a Senate-only reduction.
Mr. Chairman, line 88 is $383,000 enforcement operations reduction of the general fund. Later on, there's a natural resources fund appropriation to put that money back in from a different fund. The next item, it's a House item.
Line 89 is the House adopted a governor's recommendation reducing the budget by $85,000 and eliminating the advanced hunter education position. The next item is same House and Senate both adopted the governor's on the law enforcement recruiter position elimination. Line 91 is a House cut of $100,000 for the planner position in the operations division. Line 92 is a administrative reduction in the House of $500,000. The language in the rider directs the commissioner to make those reductions throughout the department and to the extent possible without interrupting programmatic operations.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on 93 is similar. The House or the Senate has a $844,000 reduction, which is basically the $100,000 for the planner and extra $744,000, which was basically 1% of their general fund operation. So that's how we got the $844,000. The next item is a provision from all sides, which is the on to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the $450,000 increase for flood share or flood cost share grants. That was an item that's in the House Senate and it was a governor's initiative. The next item is various different grant reductions. The Senate made only a $100,000 reduction in grants out of a $300,000 that were proposed from the governor. And the House has $650,000 in grant reductions. The next item is a reduction that the Senate took from the governor's of a reduction $150,000 in the drainage assistance program for staff. And the House has a $68,000 reduction on that program. Then the next item, line 97, the Senate added another $100,000 just general reduction to the Bowser that should be allocated across the agency.
Mr. Chairman, on line 98 is a House-only reduction to the Basin Management Organization grants of $100,000 in 09. Moving to page 2, there is an item on line 99. Both House and Senate have funded it. House at $50,000, the Senate at $100,000. It's the Star Lakes program. It's a new program created, being created in another bill. The one, at least in the House, in a different bill. I'm not sure if it's in the Senate language. Line 100 is on the Met Parks, the regional parks grants, the Met Council. The governor recommended a cut of $162,000 in each year. The House does take that cut. The Senate does not. This one, again, the House position has a corresponding increase in natural resources funding to make up the entire reduction to the general fund money. Moving on to 101, that's a PCA. This one is an appropriation of $20,000. There are some studies listed in the rider and the funding the PCA to complete those studies in the House rider language. 102 is the operating reductions. Both the governor, the Senate, and the House have that. The Senate at the governor's level of minus 473. The House has a slightly larger at a minus 623. All of them direct the agency in slightly different ways how to make those cuts, and you'll see that in the rider language.
Mr. Chairman, that is it for them. The general fund reductions for the environment agencies, and as you can see on line 103, they're pretty close in total amount of spending changes. We're off by about $298,000 between the Senate and the House on spending initiatives in the environment area. Now we're moving on to some of the revenue changes. Line 105, Senator Anderson mentioned before that the Senate has some increase in water fees in the bill that generates about $500,000 annually starting in fiscal year 09. And those are spread, like I said, when we get to the language later, it shows it's spread across various large users. The next item is a Senate-only provision. There's a $1.4 million cancellation or transfer from an existing stream protection account that was appropriated originally, I believe, in 99, and hasn't been used in the last couple of years. And it was actually a revolving loan program, and money has mostly been repaid back. And like I said, the DNR has reported they put out an RFP the last couple of years on it, and there's been no takers. So we've canceled the transfer that $1.4 million from that account into the general fund. The last item here is pretty similar between the House and the Senate. There's a little bit of fund balance left over in the existing Minnesota Resources Fund. We transfer 101. The House does 103, depends on which revenue forecast to use. So the House is probably, the 103, I believe, comes from the February forecast, and the 101 is probably from the November forecast. So so there's total revenue changes on the Senate side of $2,001,000, on the House side of $103,000. And that is it for the environment area.
Okay, so we go to Energy next, then?
Yeah, if he wants to start.
Trying to figure out how that where you have them both. And
I have them both, so whatever you.
You both have a 7 o'clock meeting, so.
Oh, that'd be great.
Who's got the greatest distance? Representative Hilty?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. The accounts that we have in the energy in the House are solely within the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission, and the target that we were given was $12,196,000 addition to the general fund, which target we have met. We attempted to respect the governor's recommendations in our division, and we did that. The governor had recommended, as was mentioned earlier, a reduction of $2.6 million in the renewable hydrogen initiative. We did respect that reduction, although with some reluctance. I think that that's a program that we would like to see go forward in the deliberations of the committee, if it's possible to find some way to restore some of that funding, and we would be grateful. in addition, the governor had recommended, and again, we did transfer $4 million from the telephone assistance program that is a fund within the Public Utilities Commission. The governor had recommended, and we again concurred with an operating budget reduction, that in the Office of Energy Security within the Department of Commerce of $46,000, and that actually is the only budget reduction. Everything else that is in our division is represented by a fund transfer. We transferred $540,000 from the do not call work through the do not call workload adjustment. There's a finding $260,000 in the unclaimed property compliance program. That's reflected. There's we are spending $130,000 to
enhance the staffing in that program, and we had testimony from Commerce that that was very likely to result in double that expenditure in revenues. There's a transfer of $3,500,000 from the insurance fraud prevention account, $1,350,000 from the real estate education research and recovery account, $100,000 from the consumer education account, $230,000 from the workers from the auto theft prevention account.
That's right.
And Mr. Chair and members, that does represent the transfers that were made within our division, and there are a couple of spending items in the division. We funded two studies that were brought forward by Representative Johnson from the Telecommunications Division, $175,000 for a broadband service mapping project, and $85,000 from for a state video franchising study. The funding for that comes from a Telecommunications Access Minnesota account, and does not affect the general fund. I believe that summarizes our portion of the bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson, did you have anything to add then?
I think we already said the differences on the energy side. I think we pretty much covered those.
You're pretty well done with that then.
I think so. I did forget one thing. I'm sorry, and this is on the environment side, on the language, so I'll get to that later.
Okay. Should we go to Representative Wagenius next then?
Much has been covered. Remarkable how close our bills are in outcomes. Little different ways of getting there. But the outcomes turn out to be just about the same. I will just go back and note on line 65, the forced land expedited exchanges. That is a bill that has also on the House floor now, either that or in Ways and Means. So that has gone through committees. And I thought we were booking that dollar, too, but apparently we're not. So just to note that. I think one of the things that we maybe should go down to is some on line 161, where we have some fees that the Senate does not. If I could proceed with those.
And that's line
161.
Okay.
We asked the DNR where they were issuing permits and not fully recuperating or recouping the money that they were spending to do the permits, and it turns out that there were in three areas besides the one that the governor had on aquatic licensing. And so that the first one is on line 161, and that's where folks seek a permit for managing their shoreline and for cutting, and the revenue taken in is about $300,000, and the cost of the program is over $1 million. So that is that. We talked about earlier the mines. When people are doing taconite mining, they don't pay the full cost of the permit activity, and that is accounted for in line 162. Aquatic farming fee is when we have fish farms in wetlands. They're not paying their full fee, and this is the beginning of recouping that, though that will be difficult because the permits are 5 years. And the 164 is the governor's rec on inspection fees. So those were the things that hadn't been covered appeared before.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Just to add to that, the last fee that you just mentioned, the one that was in the governor's rec, is traveling separately in the environment policy bill of Senator Chaudhry's. We didn't incorporate that into this bill. So we did accept it, but we just didn't put it here. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is, oh, yeah, you mentioned the forestry bill. And both that bill and the Star Lake bill that are in here as language are also, I believe, well, I know they've been sent, they went through committee and were sent to the floor as separate bills. I know the forestry bill is alive and well and has, you know, active companions on the House floor. Is the Star Lake bill alive as a separate bill on the House floor? Because it is in the Senate as well, and so those may move ahead independently. But right. The appropriations, they both have appropriations with them.
Right. There was,
so I can answer.
Yes, there was one other. We had the clean car where the bill is going separately, but the appropriation is here.
And where does that show up?
That would show up in PCA. I don't know. 157.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you for being ahead of me.
There we go. Yep, I see.
That is something. And I noted one other as we were going through where we were had sent the bill on, but we're carrying the money. And as we go through the language, I'll remember which one it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The language items?
I think if you want to start.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think I covered what's in the, if I may, what's in the Senate bill more or less very briefly on language, and Mr. Knopf can go through it in detail. If you'd like, I did forget to add the Heritage Council because that was offered by an amendment in the Finance Committee, and I've forgotten about that. And that is an abbreviated version of the bill that would establish a Heritage Council to be in charge of making recommendations.
Abbreviated.
It's not in here? Now, oh, we did do the whole bill, didn't we? I keep forgetting. On the floor, it was amended again. Okay, we have the Heritage Council bill in here.
And I just want to give you a chance, being that you have to leave, to cover what you'd like to cover relative to the language, and then we can have, if you need to leave, staff follow that up then, as you suggest. Any more comments on that then, or is that We'll make the same request of Representative Hilty then, if there's any language items in addition to what he's covered already that you'd like to mention.
Mr. Chair, we do in the House side have the same green jobs bill that Senator Anderson described earlier, and I think the other thing that we have in the House bill is a bill by Representative Kahn dealing with light pollution that we thought when we considered it for inclusion that it would have a fiscal note, but it turns out that the fiscal note was zero. However, that is still in the bill, and I think those are the only language items that
dropped out Senator Chaudhry's bill
are left in the bill.
Okay, then, Senator Anderson, did you want staff to?
It's up to you, Mr. Chair, if you'd like to have a more detailed description of the language.
I just am trying to respect your schedule.
I'm fine. So. I've got a little more time. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Representative Hilty, you're still okay for a while? Okay. Why don't we begin then with staff going through in more detail.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to start on page R1 and 2? Just kind of go through the side-by-side.
That'll be fine.
Well, Mr. Chairman, on page 1, you see a little bit different in the summary appropriations, but that's just the boilerplate. We'll be going by whatever you decide for the overall language in the bill. On page 2, you can see the PCA reductions. The House has some additional language. I don't know if House staff wanted to talk about the additional language on page R2 and 3 that they have.
Members, on page R2, this the House has the $20,000 appropriation to PCA for three reports. These are revolving solid waste coming from a bill from Representative Gardner. The first is on product stewardship, and then on page R3, The second one is for metro construction and demolition waste recycling. And then in our four, there's the 2020 goals for recycling.
And
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, I'll just note that the only language in the agency and on the Senate side is 84.21. It just says that the administration is to reduce funding for agency operations. That was it for language on the Senate side. In the land and minerals section, you'll see some differences there, and it's based upon, you heard about it on the spreadsheets. I don't think there's any reason to go into much detail about the riders that are there. There's some technical differences. On page R6, you see the Senate has some riders on ring dikes and the Red River remediation agreement. The House has language on page R42 for both of those provisions. So both sides do the same thing. It's just we have it in rider form and they have it in amendments to last year's appropriation bill or appropriation law. And there's some technical differences on the study, nothing big deal. And then, of course, the House has the information cooperative that was described in the spreadsheet. And then you'll see on the state park, both sides do the same. That was, again, talked about in the spreadsheet. On trails and waterway management, you can see the different riders. The House has a couple of additional, the Senate has some money in for vehicle trail rehabilitation and all-terrain vehicle grants and aid for local trails. And the House has got more money, but in different places. And you see that it has the money for Gilbert and then for a grant to the city of Boabic for the Moose Trail. On the fish and wildlife, you can see that, again, this was related to the language. The Senate does include riders for the licensing in the shooting sports center. The House doesn't have riders in for those, but apparently the reduction includes those. The House has a number of additional riders. Some of that is with the VHS, the money for VHS control, and that, again, as Senator Anderson mentioned, was an amendment the other day in the policy bill in the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division. And then the same with on the House 162.10, basically the money from that's a fee increase that you'll also see later. Now, there is one part in the House side. If House wants to explain it, it's 162.13 on the shooting sports facilities.
Yeah, that provision is a provision of Representative Dills. It's providing a $300,000 appropriation for a shooting facility on Vermilion Highlands Wildlife Management Area.
And
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, you can see that the on the next page, the House does have a rider on the Project Wild for the next biennium, but not for this biennium. Otherwise, they both have the same transfer language. That was just something that had to be a catch-up from last year, something that should have been in last year's bill. On enforcement, you can see that both sides take reductions. You went over that on the spreadsheet. What the Senate does is basically take 458 as a reduction in general fund, which includes the conservation officer, and then puts back in the water recreation account money to replace the 383 that would be different from the 75. And then here's one piece on the Senate side. You can see from the ATV account on 87.4, there is $185,000 for county law enforcement agency grants for ATV enforcement. And then for the general reduction, that was discussed earlier. The riders aren't that much different. It's just that the House is a little more elaborate in the language that you use. Bowser, you can see that the riders just could reflect what you saw in the spreadsheet earlier about the reductions. The Senate doesn't take a reduction from the native buffers, but the House takes $550,000 from the native buffer cost sharing. And then also you can see the difference in the drainage assistant and the basin management. One difference on the new money that's appropriated, the $450,000, the House says that up to 20% of the appropriation may be used by the board to implement the program. The Senate does not contain that language. I think we were given a note from somebody from the board that the language was unnecessary. The House also includes both sides have the money until expended. The House adds language to put some more money into the base in the next biennium. The Senate's silent on a one-time, but since it's available until expended, those are usually treated as one-time appropriations. And then, again, the Senate takes the one-time reduction on 87.30. And then, of course, the Star Lake Board, the House just has it generally for a Star Lake and River program. The Senate includes the language, so you'll see you'll see that later in the side-by-side. And then the House has the language on the Metropolitan Council. Again, and I think when they're going through the spreadsheet, they talked a little bit about that there's money coming back from the Natural Resources Fund for that purpose. I don't know if that's from the parks account within the local park account within that.
Mr. Chairman, that is from the lottery and lieu money from the portion that's allocated for parks here, Metro.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reynolds, is that from the part that's allocated? Because there's an allocation in the statute for which area gets what part of that money.
This one, Mr. Chairman, yes, right. That is.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chairman, on the transfers, you can see the Future Resources Fund, as was mentioned. Both sides transfer the same amount of money. I think on the spreadsheet you saw different numbers. The Senate side just says estimated to be $101,000. So, but anything that's an unappropriated balance within that fund would still transfer. And then you see the language on the transfer, the 1.4 from the Stream Protection Improvement Fund that was mentioned by Mr. Mueller. R-12, I think we have some House provisions. The House staff want to talk about those.
On page R-12, the first section is a section that allows the aquatic farm licensing fees to be increased. That was mentioned by our Representative Wiginius. And then section 2 is the governor's rec on the fish inspection fees for aquatic farms related to VHS. On page R-13, section 3, actually sections 3 through 7 are all from House File 3068, which was Dill's proposal to standardize temporary permit validation time, so they're 21 days rather than 10 days, similar to automobiles. He does this for snowmobiles, off-highway motorcycles, and watercraft.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I just mentioned this, Senator Bach did introduce a similar bill, but it was not heard in committee here.
And then skipping ahead to page R-17, section 8. This was a DNR request. It makes some changes for youth operation of ATVs. It would allow them to ride on state trails provided they have an ATV safety certificate and they are accompanied by a parent. It also requires those under age 16 to be able to reach the handles and also the foot pedals.
And, Mr. Chairman, again, Senator Scogin introduced this on the Senate side, but it was not heard in committee.
Sections 9 through 14, starting on page R-18, are from the DNR technical bill. They make changes to and some clarifications regarding state parks.
That's the DNR technical bill.
Mr. Chairman, those are all in Senate File 3385. Senator Chaudhry, that's in Senator Anderson's division, going to be heard again next Tuesday. All the provisions on R-18 and R-19 are contained within that policy bill.
Okay, then page R-19, section 15 is another provision related to the temporary permits that I mentioned previously. Section 16 is another DNR request. This would expand the responsibility for campfires to those who also maintain a campfire rather than those who have just started the campfire. And it also provides a definition for maintains for this purposes. Page R-20, section 17, this is another DNR request. It makes some changes and clarifies their process for establishing state forest roads.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to chime in here, if you don't mind. This provision is also contained in Senator Chaudhry's 3385 and also in the forestry bill that Senator Anderson mentioned, 2651, as it was at least amended in division. I don't think you'll see it on the Internet that way yet. There are some differences, though. There are some technical differences between the House and Senate versions of this. The Senate, there were some concerns with the way that on the House side on 180.31 to 181.2, that is kind of a circular reference, and the way it would kind of read with the definition didn't read quite right. And so there were some modifications that were done over in the Senate to this provision. So it is a little bit different in those other bills.
The next House section on page R22, section 18, it establishes a mining administration account, and this is just to receive the mining administration fees that are established later on and that were reflected in the spreadsheet. And the next section is a Senate provision, but it's also being carried, as mentioned, in House File 3280, moving through the House.
And, Mr. Chairman, this was the savings of the $66,000. This is the section that that was mentioned earlier in the spreadsheet, that there would be some cost reductions because of this expedited process for exchanging public lands with other public lands. And then, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll continue on because the next one is on Senate on R24. You got the power to prevent or control wildlife disease. This was part of a floor amendment by Senator Scoy. Senator Scoy has a bovine TB bill, and when it was added to the Senate bill, one of the sections was a natural resource section dealing with control. And what this does is puts an additional penalty. Well, first it expands the radius from 15 to 30 miles, and then it also adds a penalty for violation of that that feeding ban, the wildlife feeding ban in that area, to also prohibit a hunting license for 2 years after conviction.
I'd like to add that the House also has a similar provision regarding the changing of the radius, expanding that. It doesn't have the penalty, and that's being carried in the House Game and Fish Bill. The next section, Section 19, was originally included in the DNR Technical Bill. It clarifies some provisions related to citizen subcommittees.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's in Senator Chaudhry's policy bill. And, Mr. Chairman, the next one is a Senate on page R26, Section 9, and that is the language for the Lessard Heritage Enhancement Council. And it's comparable language to what the Senate passed last year as part of the constitutional amendment. It's been carried in Senate File 3488. Senator Chaudhry also has it in his omnibus policy bill. But I don't know if you want me to go into too much detail. I think people are pretty familiar with the proposal, unless people have questions about how it works. But it's the 16 members with basically 10 citizens and 6 legislators. Move on, I think, to page R20. That goes all the way. And again, just to point out on 94.22 to 94.23 that this would only become law if the voters approved the constitutional amendment in November.
Then on page R29, the House Section 20, this is another DNR request. It gives them greater flexibility when they're acquiring public water access sites.
And, Mr. Chairman, that Senator Scogin introduced that in Senate File 3401, but it was not heard in the Senate.
And on page R30, sections 21 through 23 is the House alternative to the governor's repealing one of the groundwater reports. Representative Gardner worked with the department on these provisions, and what they do is they just consolidate a number of water-related reports. And then on page R31, you'll see the Senate Section 10 is the governor proposal.
Do you have a reduction tied to that?
Then page R32 is the language for the Star Lakes being carried in the Senate. I don't know if Senate staff wants to.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is from Senator Mary Olson's Senate File 2943, and this does create the Star Lake program for lake or river associations to become Star Lakes or rivers. And it does have worked out extensively in the Senate, including a number of changes in the State and Local Government Committee to deal with some other local government concerns within it. I won't go into too much detail, but it does allow for basically you put together a plan and then they become a Star Lake. Probably the big thing is on page R34 is the Star Lake Board. I think the bill in the House may be slightly different than this. This does create the Star Lake Board as a 501c3 nonprofit. The legislature has done this in a couple of other instances with the Minnesota Conservation Corps, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. Some of those are all set up as 501c3s by statute, similar to this. And it does have a membership, so it would be a nonprofit board that would, and you can see the detail about who's going to be designated for appointment to the board. And then there's a lot of language about place of business, chairs, meetings, counts and audits, including including the audits by the legislative auditor in subdivision 9. And conflicts of interest. So there is a lot of language that's comparable to what's for the AURI would be for the Star Lake Board. And then in Section 13, you can see the water fee increases that Mr. Mueller mentioned earlier. The first one is that for up to 50 million gallons, you're going from 101 to 140, and then you see the 50-cent increments for amounts above that. And that's what raises approximately $500,000 per year with those water fee changes. And, Mr. Chairman, then we're on to page R38 and the House provision.
On page R38, the House section 24 and 25 on the next page are related. They're from a Representative Gardner bill, and what they do is would require public water suppliers serving more than 1,000 people to have a rate structure that encourages conservation.
And Mr. Chairman and members, just a note, that was introduced by Senator Rummel in the Senate 2973, and it's still in the Policy Committee. It was not heard.
And then Section 26 is another House provision, and this was mentioned previously. It removed some limits on aquatic plant harvesting permit fees, so the department has some flexibility to establish those by rule, like the rest of the aquatic plant management fees. On page R40, section 27, this is a House provision that requires some extra testing when siting certain landfills, and the purpose of this is to protect groundwater, and this was originally carried by Representative Bunn.
And, Mr. Chair, this was also Senator Saltzman introduced a much shorter version of this. I'm sure it looks like it was worked out extensively in the House side. It was Senate File 3703, Senator Saltzman, but again, that was not heard in the Policy Committee. I think it was a fairly late bill. And then, Mr. Chairman, on R41, this is again part of Senator Mary Olson's section 14 on the Senate side. This is the basically it's the sign provision. It's in the transportation parts of the statutes, and what it does is it allows signs to be erected. Basically, you can request the Department of Transportation to erect a sign, and then they pay for that sign. So that's again, it's kind of modeled after the Star City sign language that's in current law. And then, Mr. Chairman, I guess we have some House provisions.
On page R42, section 29 is another section related to the consolidation of the groundwater reports mentioned previously. And then section 6 is, remember when we were going through the riders, the water resource reductions. This is just, we did this in law rather than in the rider. So this is as reflected in the spreadsheet here. Then page R44, the House Senate Section 7 and the Senate Section 15, they're identical to the governor's recs. And what they do is they just allow some flexibility when using the forest management funds. And then on page R47, Section 8, this is a governor's rec that the House is also supporting, and it just provides some flexibility for certain trail grants receiving federal funding. And then on page R50, Section 28, this was related to the landfill siting bill carried by Representative Bunn, and it establishes a landfill working group to provide some recommendations on managing industrial and construction and demolition waste facilities.
They're right.
And then the next Section 30 establishes a fee schedule for the mining administrative fee mentioned previously, and it just lays out when they're applicable and what each mine should be responsible for paying. Section 31 on page R51 just requires some rules related to the temporary permit changes to the from 10 to 21 days. And then the next two are Senate provisions.
And Mr. Chairman, yes, the Senate provisions on the first meeting deadline, that's again part of the Star Lakes provision. This just basically gives a timeline for appointments. And then Section 17, that was another bill of Senator Mary Olson, Senate File 3237. And that basically, what Senator Anderson mentioned that earlier, that by the end of the next biennium, the commissioner is directed to update the rules for public waters, permit requirements for structures.
Section 32 is repealer language. All of the repealers were DNR requests. The first one repeals some language requiring a prairie biologist in the department. Apparently, they have five at this point, and they feel this is obsolete language. The next repealer repeals a wayside rest that I think has been transferred to the county or some other local unit of government, if I remember correctly. The next one repeals some requirements regarding public water access sites related to the previous statutory provision mentioned. And then the final one repeals laws from 1989 that required a biennial financial report by the Division of Enforcement.
And, Mr. Chairman, except for the water access sites, the 97A-141 Subdivision 2, the remainder were in the technical bill from the DNR, and the Senate does carry those in the policy bill. The only one we don't have is the 97A-141 Subdivision 2. That's because we didn't hear that bill this year.
Go to the energy section.
Mr. Chair and members, starting on page R52, section 1 summarizes the appropriations from various funding sources. Section 2 provides definitions. Turning to page R53, section 3 lists appropriations for the Department of Commerce under various funds. On page, and that continues on page 54, R54, and also at the bottom of page R54 begins the rider language. Specifies $300,000 in the first year for the solar rebate program, $175,000 in the second year for the broadband mapping project in Representative Johnson's bill. On page R55, there's $85,000 in the second year for a state video franchising study, also in a bill sponsored by Representative Johnson. In the middle of that page, there are amounts appropriated up to $250,000 for cold weather biodiesel blending infrastructure grants, $500,000 to support algae to biofuels research projects at the University of Minnesota and the Metropolitan Council, and up to $500,000 to be used for studies done under the cap and trade bill that's currently proceeding on its own through the House if that bill is enacted. At the bottom of that page, it specifies that amounts are to be appropriated from the Special Revenue Fund the second year for was passed last year for automotive technology projects, and that money is to be used to fund the report and the activities of the Green Economy Transformation Task Force. $200,000 in the first year, and on the top of page R56, $200,000 in the second year as well. In the middle of page R56 is the cancellation of $2.6 million for the Renewable Hydrogen Initiative grants. And at the bottom of page R56 and continuing through most of page R57 are transfers from various accounts from the Department of Commerce to the General Fund. At the bottom of page R57 is a transfer from the Public Utilities Commission, the Telephone Assistance Fund, of $4 million to the General Fund that's reflected in both the House and Senate language. On page R58, is language that, as Representative Hilty mentioned, is in a bill that was sponsored by Representative Kahn regarding outdoor lighting that is state-funded. Definitions for this bill were actually passed in last year's session. This is the rest of the bill here. On page R59 We've got Section 6, Coordinating Economic Development and Environmental Policy. That section lists definitions, which the Senate has also. There's some slight language differences. Subdivision 2 at the bottom of that page specifies the commissioner will cooperate to promote job training that complements green economy business development. And then on page R60 at the top, Section 7, this refers to the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Account grants, and Section 7 specifies that projects that advance or promote green economy are eligible to be priorities. And also on page R61, that those same projects are eligible projects to receive monies from that fund. Those are both in both the House and Senate language. At the bottom of page R61 in Section 9 is a change that increases or extends for 2 years the ability of a qualified hydroelectric project to receive renewable energy payment incentives, extends that from 2009 to 2011. And at the top of page R62 also provides that those payments are projects that receive those payments are eligible to receive them for 10 years. It extends 2 years as well, the limit for receiving those payments from 2019 to 2021. In Section 11 on page R62, there's language that allows the Department of Commerce Division of Insurance Fraud Prevention to seize property. That's a governor's recommendation. Page R63 contains language referring to the state video franchising study and Representative Johnson's bill. States what that study is, and the report is to be made, again, it's now the top of page R64, by next February. That's followed by Section 13, Representative Johnson's broadband mapping project. And on page R65, there's language asking the Commissioner of Commerce and Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to analyze state and grant and loan programs to optimize, develop a plan specific to each of the programs to optimize the growth of the green economy. That's language that's in both the House and the Senate, although it's slightly different. And Section 15 on page R65 specifies the membership of the Green Economy Transformation Task Force. Again, there's some differences there, both in the number of members and what areas they're representing. And finally, on page R66, the duties of the task force are listed, and those are very much the same in both the House and Senate language.
Mr. Chairman, the only things I want to point out here on the Senate side, or actually, let's go to page R55, where the House has made some allocations from the existing RDF appropriations on line 193.28. I just want to point out on the Senate side, we've just addressed this in the Senator Vickerman's Ag Policy Bill. The first item, the cold weather biodiesel blending, we actually are using an existing Department of Ag General Fund appropriation for that. Again, that's the Senator Vickerman's Ag Policy Bill. The algae to biofuels research at the U of M, that is also coming out of the RDF fund in Senator Vickerman's bill. And the cap and trade appropriation is being carried right now in Senator Anderson's Senate File 2818, but that is also out of the RDF. So we have similar positions on this paragraph. They just exist in a different bill. And on the bottom of this page, R55, and on to the next page, I'll just point out we do have similar language on page R56 for covering the cost of the Green Economy Transformation Task Force. The Senate does not list a specific dollar amount. It just says that cost for the task force should be covered under the existing RDF appropriation for the plug-in hybrids. The House has similar language, but it specifies the amount. And the House also has an assessment on page R56 for the task force that the Senate does not have. A couple other riders on the Senate side, you'll note that tie out to the appropriations. Page R56, line 106.6 is the reduction for the second year of the E85 grants. The new appropriation for the using with biodiesel feedstocks, and then the reduction from the hydrogen initiative grants that we noted in the spreadsheet. Let's see, is there any other differences? The other items that we have Senate language, and we're pretty close with the House, on page R59, dealing with the Green Economy Task Force, the Senate has extra definition on line 107.13 to 15 defining green economy. On line 107.17, we include the green or the Job Skills Partnership Board in the group there. On the next page, the last item is dealing with the Green Economy Task Force on page R65. There's just some different, a little bit different makeup in the task force. Looks like the House has 18 members. The Senate has has 20 right now. And then up on the report on line 109.4, we exclude the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board from participating in the report. And that's, other than that, the language is pretty similar. And those are the most of the differences in the energy part of the bill where the Senate has language.
Okay, are there any questions? Thank you very much. We'll go to the economic development section. Now, in the House, it's economic development and higher education, but the higher education part of it will be done at our next meeting, so we'll be focusing on just the economic development. Which of you would like to
I'll start.
Go first, Senator Tomassoni?
That's half the place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should point out one of the things that's not in this bill that was in early on, because since it's the start of the playoffs for the Minnesota Wild, I want to point out that naming Minnesota the state of hockey was removed on both in the Finance Committee and on the Senate floor. So that provision isn't in this bill, but hopefully it shows up in some other bill in the very near future.
It used to be in here twice.
Yeah, where it used to be in here twice, that's correct.
Did so, were you promoting that then, Representative?
Well, I was a co-author. Yeah,
I think we're aware of your history.
I was a co-author. Actually, it was Senator Olson who was promoting it, and it was brought to her by some school kids who decided that that Minnesota should be have a sport, like a muffin, you know. The
hockey muffin. Players eat muffins.
Yeah, exactly.
Blueberry muffins.
So that makes perfect sense, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you know, there, Senator Tomassoni, I met some of the students that did the muffin project when Rep. Sam Murphy brought them down, and they had quite a classroom project that went behind that. They had to research Minnesota products and those products' impact on the economy. And, of course, we know that hockey would probably lend itself to that same kind of research. So did those students do some classroom tasks as well, or was it strictly their experience on the rink?
No, Mr. Chairman, there was a whole history of what was going on as far as hockey was concerned, but you must be experiencing some of the economic impact being a grandfather of some of these kids that are playing
hockey.
That
I am, from my wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
But, no, there could be. Sometimes kids really get into a project like that. That would be an interesting topic, what the economic impact is, being that that's part of what we're talking about. But rather than getting sidetracked here, Representative Tomassoni, why don't you go ahead?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I know on one other footnote, Senator Cohen, after this is over,
because he can't
we get through all of these reviews, we're preparing a test.
Okay. Well, I hope it's multiple choice. And C is
so everybody pay close attention.
I hope it's not about hockey.
Mr. Chairman, hopes it's not about hockey is what he just said. But,
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'll go through the spreadsheet then. I've got this spreadsheet. I think there might have a couple in your packet, so I've got this long one here. On line 5, the Senate reduced the Minnesota Investment Fund by $4 million. On line 20, we funded a nanotechnology economic development design project for $100,000. Veterans Business Assistance Program at $250,000. Hired, we did at $200,000. And then LifeTrack Resources at $75,000. There is a transfer from the tourism to the Minnesota Film Board. It's a governor's recommendation at $500,000. And then we've increased the funding to the Minnesota Film Board by $2,150,000. There is a budget reduction to the Housing Finance Agency of $200,000, to the Minnesota Historical Society by $200,000, to the Arts Board, the Grants Program by $175,000. Then there's cancellations and revenue transfers. The first one is a foreign trade zone on line 73 for $608,000. There's a job skill partnership cancellation. The foreign trade zone was also a governor's recommendation. The job skill partnership cancellation is $500,000. The governor recommended $1 million. We have a $15,000 payment to the Red Lake Business Loan Program. There's a St. Paul loan repayment provision for the hockey rink at $1.5 million. The Workforce Development Fund transfer is a governor's recommendation of $8 million. Methamphetamine lab cleanup transfer for $150,000 is also a governor's recommendation. We've also transferred $2.7 million from the Minnesota Investment Fund, and then transfer of $4 million from the Code Consolidation Fund. And then, Mr. Chairman, members, I should point out that included in the side-by-sides, and it'll be right on the first page. I won't go through the side-by-side, but included on the first page, you'll see monies that we transferred from $2 million from the insurance fraud prevention account, $25 million from the workers' compensation assigned risk plan, and then $20.5 million by taking off the cap on the mutual funds fee. Those show up on the spreadsheet in the commerce section, but they will show up in our bill on the side-by-side because that's how it was passed off the floor. Those particular counts were in my division in the Senate. The total counting those was about $66 million charged back to the general fund.
And that mutual fund one, Mr. Marks just reminded me, is in our tax section. So,
okay.
Then we'll go to Representative Rukavina, but I.
It's in the tax area, but it's at a lesser amount. I was just clarifying. At roughly half of the governor's recommendation in the Senate position.
I meant the subject matter, but yep. That's a good clarification, and thank you. Representative Rukavina, when we have these accounts lined up, I assume either you or Mr. Soderberg will touch on the Historical Society and
Mr. Chair, I intend
Housing
to
Finance Agency.
Right. I'll turn it over to Mr. Soderberg when I get to those, since I know absolutely nothing about it. But if you look on the spreadsheet on line two, we took $550,000 from the deed, which is the 4% cut that everybody got. On line four, we funded $2 million for the initiative funds, which the governor had requested. Line five and six, we reduced the Minnesota Investment Fund by $3 million, and we took $1 million of that for a biomass energy conversion pilot project for public facilities. Line seven, we required the department to use $100,000 from the Greater Minnesota Development Fund for a global marketplace in Minneapolis. On line 14, we funded the governor's initiative for $400,000 for the Office of Science and Technology. On line 21, we funded $500,000 a year for the Veterans Business Assistance Program. On line 22, we took $500,000 for the Job Training Assistance Program for returning veterans. On line 23, we funded $125,000 one-time money for the HIRED program, which is a successful job training program. On line 24, we funded $200,000 for Hennepin Carver Workforce Investment Board. On line 25, we funded $75,000 for a LifeTrack resource program in Rochester. And, Mr. Chair, why don't I just keep going on for mine. On line 73, we canceled $608,000 for the Foreign Trade Zone Authority. On line 74, We accepted the governor's recommendations for $1 million cancellation of the Job Skill Partnership account. We transferred $1 million of this for seed initiatives. On line 75, we extended the loan repayment for Red Lake, which the Senate also did. On line 77, we accepted the governor's recommendation for $8 million from the Workforce Development Fund, a cancellation to the general fund. And on line 78, we accepted the governor's recommendation on a cancellation of $150,000 from the methamphetamine lab cleanup fund. And line 81, we transferred $14 million from the Workers' Compensation Special Fund to the general fund. The Senate used the signed risk plan. And I believe I forgot to mention the boxing board on line 67. And then with that, I'll just turn it over to Mr. Soderberg for the agencies that are not in my division.
Okay, Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, there are not that many items left. The only difference in the Explore Minnesota Tourism between the House and the Senate, beyond what Senator Tomasoni mentioned, is there's a vacation rental lodging study in the House provision, and that will be out of the base of Explore Minnesota Tourism. The Housing Finance Agency, the House had no reduction in their budget. There is showing $2.4 million in the tail a year, and that's for the bonding provision. It was a provision was in the bonding bill for supportive housing, $30 million in supportive housing. On line 44 is the labor and industry. I don't know if you mentioned that, Mr. Chair.
I forgot. That's just the 4%, Mr. Chair, that base reduction to everyone.
Right. And that carries through with the Mediation Services Bureau as well. The other one would be the House had no budget reduction in Minnesota Historical Society. The Sesquicentennial Commission grants, you may recall, members, in the deficiency bill, Chapter 155, there was $175,000. These items are in addition to that $175,000. The House has $750,000, and the Senate has $500,000. And Wise note that the Senate did theirs in 08, and if this becomes a position of the committee, I would recommend that it be done in 08 so the money gets out the door as quickly as possible. And I think the only other one is the Arts Board reduction. The House has did not have a reduction comparable to the Senate's. And the Boxing Board, and I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Soderberg. Any questions at this point? Language?
Mr. Chairman, I'd
like to start on
Mr. Jensen.
The Senate is.
Mr. Jensen, be ready to do that.
If you'd like to begin.
Yeah, you're going to do it, though, right?
Chairman, members, there was a couple of changes in the spreadsheet from the revisor. I just want to check to make sure you have the April 9th spread side by side of 2:14 p.m.
Yep.
Is that the right one? Mr. Chairman, I'll go through this and try and skip over those items that were just related to the money that was just explained. Starting on page R5, the language is a little bit different for the hired program. The House has a one-time appropriation on lines 92.19, and the Senate has added that to the budget base on the Senate side on 128.33.
Is there property tax?
And on page R6, some of the transfers in are a little bit different. The Senate has the carry forward transferring to the general fund for the Minnesota Investment Fund on line 129.25. On R7, from the labor and industry, the Senate transfers in $4 million from the code consolidation fund to the general fund. On page R9, section 11 on the Senate side, it's page 132.21.
Talk about housing.
This language is in the bonding bill, except on line 132.26. It says grant money may be used by the municipality, county, or regional rail authority. The language in the bonding bill adds the word municipality. Otherwise, the language is the same. On page 11 in the Job Skills Partnership Board, this was a... I believe it's an agency request just to talk about the dissemination of information from the partnership program of grants and training through the business community. On line 134.13, it talks about the dissemination of the information. Section 15 is the use of the workforce development funds. Striking out on line 134.28 statutes for the higher education loan program. That's an old program funded with general fund dollars that's no longer used, and it would not be eligible for funding under the workforce development fund. That carries over through page R12. R13, we have in addition to the definitions for the dislocated workers on the Senate side and on the House, too, we're adding veterans to the definition of what's a dislocated worker. That the Senate did not provide the additional money for the training and hiring program, but by making them eligible for this dislocated worker or workforce development fund, they would be in the base and it would be a continuing program. Mr. Chairman, on page R15, again, on the Senate side, that's that loan program is taken out of the statutes. And on the House side, you add the Combative Sports Commission language in this bill, and that's all House language for the next several pages. The Senate has a
separate
bill.
Actually, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, on page R16, House sections.
I made a mistake. I got my.
It's quite all right, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
Sections 12 and 13 are technical changes relating to unemployment insurance. And the House language makes several unemployment changes, so those aren't combative sports. That's not Combative Sports Commission language. You're on R17. This is the governor's replacement.
Mr. Chair, I'll use my little thing that I have here on R17. So is the Senate, Mr. Jansen, are you done with?
Mr. Chairman, there's some House language on R21. Again, I think it's unemployment insurance. Down to line.
Well, Mr. Chair, do you want me to start from the right from the beginning on the side by side then? The House language?
I'm not sure where Mr. Jensen, where you. Did you want to stop at that point and do this through the House and then revert back to the
Senate? That'd be fine, Mr. Chairman.
I'm kind of leaving it up to. So why don't we do it that way then, Representative Rucavina? Why don't you bring us to this point with the House language then?
Just on the language itself, then, Mr. Chair, starting on, I guess for me, page R5 would be to discuss the other money. The language there cancels a number of transfers from different accounts and then appropriates the $2 million, I believe, from the or it discussed the $2 million of JobSkill partnership program, the hired, and all of those other ones that we talked about earlier. So I could probably jump to R7, which requires the Commissioner Deed to make a $1 million loan to and a grant to a Magnetation Incorporated out of the 21st Century Minerals Fund. We also have the Sports Commission dollar amounts there and all of the money. So I'm just going to jump then to page R9, which is language. We have language requests by Representative Solberg relating to some previous appropriation for the 2020 fund. We have language relating to the Minnesota Veterans program that the governor had requested. Page R10, it still deals with the programs for the Veterans Affairs. Through page R13, we have more language dealing with the governor's request for the different GI bills. Through page R14 on that. Page R15 is all the language dealing with the Boxing Commission that Representative Gunther carried for the governor. And on R16, we have technical language recommended by the Department of Energy and Economic Development, clarifying language. On the bottom of the page, we have language dealing with unemployment insurance for that was requested by Representative Detmer and in one of the governor's proposals. That goes through page R18, where I have some language that I had in a bill for unemployment insurance requested, I believe, and supported, requested by the AFL-CIO and supported by the deed. We also have language there that I've had in last year's bill and this year's bill regarding a $5,000 severance allowance that is new language. And on page R19, we have more language by Representative Detmer dealing with unemployment insurance that the department supports. We also have language here that on page R19, in section 16, I believe it is, that a union person who's waiting to return to work is eligible for unemployment. I think Deed also supports that and was requested by the AFL-CIO. On page R20, we have additional 12 weeks of unemployment insurance for unemployed workers that are living in counties that have at least a 1.8 rate unemployment rate above the average statewide average. It would cover three counties, and I think Deed supports some language that that Senator Tomasoni has that clarifies that. That goes through page R22. Where I had a bill last year that I took out, but I put this language back in here that requires a deed worker in all of the, at least one worker in all of the workforce centers throughout the state. We had that highly controversial automated system come on last year that I thought proved that this was needed. On page R23, we have language dealing with the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board that sets up the membership of the Higher Education Board for the Taconite Relief Area. And on page R24, there's more language dealing with a program that we currently have at the IRRB that gives rebates to the mining companies that is eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and this is all similar language with the Senate dealing with that, and we have an appropriation, an increase of 3 cents, excuse me, for higher education account. There's language from that we needed last year. We had language that the Doug Johnson Fund could be used to purchase property. It was vetoed in the tax bill, and then it was approved in this year's tax bill. And this allows that we could sell that land as long as we put the sale back into the Doug Johnson Fund. And that brings us through page R27.
This goes through 38.
Yeah, and this is all that language dealing with the boxing board that the governor and Representative Gunther supported. And that goes all the way through R38, where we have the language for Representative Moe's bill that allows local units of government to bond on the state bonding capacity at the Public Facilities Authority.
That's insane. And that goes
to R49. And that's the same as the Senate language through page R49.
Mr. Chairman, there's another change on page R39 for the section 27. That's for the Public Facilities Authority. The language is the same in the House and the Senate, but it deals with a wastewater infrastructure project. We're changing the grant from one half up to 65%. And then there's a change on the next paragraph in line, Senate side 144.20. What it really means is the cost plus the balance of any existing loan is added together to see who's qualified for these loans. It's a small change, but it deals with the Public Facilities Authority. No, it makes them get more money.
And then, Mr. Chair, on page R49, there's some Senate language.
I didn't hear R what?
R49, there's Senate language that I think we may have in a separate bill in the House.
3346, it was passed April 1st.
I don't know if Mr. Jensen, do you want to talk about that now?
Mr. Chairman, on page R49 on the Senate side, we have a provision there to help with prevention of mortgage foreclosures. And the base within housing finance, they have some money that they would apply to this program to help a little bit, I think, with offsetting some of the problems with the current mortgage foreclosure. That's
Mr. Chair. Or Senator Higgins. I hesitate because I keep trying to call you representatives, but I'll get used to it in the next few days.
Mr. Chair, this is a pot of money that one of the local banks just added $500,000 to. So we're at this point able to give about twice as much money as we are currently able to for folks who are facing foreclosure. And it is specifically targeted for people who have gotten behind on their payments, but once they get caught up, they can afford their payments. So it's to help them with that arrears. This is my bill in the Senate.
Is this a good hint, then?
A hint?
I say you were giving us a good
Linda's
hint.
Linda's bill on this.
How you got the money out of the bank.
I just was given a note that this is on the general register in the House. And it's Dabney. That Representative Dabney has the bill. So we're moving on that as well.
And if I can kick it out of Senator Cohen's.
Okay, are we back with Representative Tomasoni?
Mr. Chairman, on R50, page R50, there's another housing provision on, it's section 32, page 155.24. This language is also in the bonding bill, the exact same language. And on line 156.5 is additional language that's also in the bonding bill dealing with the nonprofit housing bonds. In this bill and in the Senate bill, you have authorizations of $30 million with general fund money to be applied in fiscal year 10 and 11 to service the debt. These would be housing finance revenue bonds, but paid for by the general fund. The reason both sides are doing this is the difficulty in using general obligation bonds in nonprofit buildings. It's very difficult to determine who owns what and what belongs to what organization. So we're trying revenue bonds paid for from the general fund to get away from that problem. Section 34 is in the bonding bill. It's formatted a little bit different. It has another definition for permanent supportive housing. In this language, it's on page 51, R51, 157.12. But in the bonding bill, it's a separate definition.
So, Jensen, I've got a question on these areas that you're referencing that are in the bonding bill. Once or twice you said there was a minor language difference between what's here and what's in the bonding bill. So the question I would have, those minor language differences, is that something that would be substantive as we go through that, or is it something we should just at some point drop because it's already law?
Mr. Chairman, I think there's only one that's...
Maybe you mentioned it once. I think you said a minor.
One dealing with... Chairman, I think it was on page R9. Let me check.
No, we don't need to locate it now, but I guess if you remembered, if it was, is there a substantive difference, or should we just, when we get to that point, when we're making decisions about the bill, just drop all of this that's in current law, or is that something we should revert back to?
Mr. Chairman, I think you might want to revert back to two of the items.
To two of them that are, even though they're in law, there's a difference that's worthy of looking at. Okay. Maybe if staff could highlight those differences, then we can make a decision on that part of it relative to what's by and large in law then. Okay, Mr. Jensen?
R51.
Mr. Chairman, on R52, Section 35 is also in the bonding bill, the exact same language. So that one would be in law under Chapter 179 that the governor signed. Members on R52, Section 36 begins the loan forgiveness for a loan that was made to the City of St. Paul for the construction of the Excel Center. They're upfronting $1.5 million in this biennium and another $500,000 in fiscal year 11. So help balance the budget. And then there would be a loan forgiveness after starting in fiscal year 12. That continues on to page R55. Mr. Chairman, R55, the Upper Red Lake Business Loan Program, the language is the same, and on a spreadsheet there was a loss of revenue by this change of $28,000 for this biennium and next. Mr. Chairman, on R55, Section 38, this is also in the bonding bill. This is on line 161.29. The bonding bill says in surrounding areas instead of in contiguous counties. you may want to discuss the difference for the steel mill project in Itasca County.
Mr. Chair, do you want me then?
I think we're ready for you.
Okay, on our 58 is the language that I talked about for the appropriation that Representative Clark had from the Minnesota Redevelopment Grant Program to Global Marketplace. On R 59, there's language that allows the appropriation from last year to Minnesota Technology to carry forward funds spent. And on page R-64 is the cancellation of the $3 million from the Minnesota Investment Fund, of which $1 million is used for a biofuel conversion program that I talked about in the spreadsheet. On R-65, there was an appropriation last year for extended employment programs that the governor had recommended cutting, and this says that the expenditure is extended until the money's expended. And R-70 is the there was a $100,000 appropriation made in the first year of the biennium to carry forward so it doesn't cancel. R-72 is the language for the biomass conversion program for public facilities, and there's also language that requires the Department of Employment and Economic Development to reimburse individuals who can prove that they suffered an economic hardship from the computer debacle from last early this year. On page R-73 is extended unemployment language for 13 weeks for Ainsworth Lumber Company in Cook. Yeah, the Senate, I think, has a 26-week extension on that. And on page R-75 is some language for Northwest Airlines that basically should it was helped written by the department for a Northwest Airlines employee who was given some misinformation on applying for unemployment during their strike. And on page R-76 is language establishing the Office of Science and Technology within the Department of Employment and Economic Development that we had that $400,000 for. On R-77, there's language that Representative Clark had inserted in the bill requiring bioscience businesses that receive public subsidies to show and report how their products will benefit consumers through more affordable pricing. Article on R-77, there's the one-time distributions from the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund to a number of cities and school districts. And on page R-78 are some repealers that deal with the old language on the Boxing Commission, independent living programs, and the repealer dealing with the 30.1 cents that I mentioned earlier that used to go to the mining industry that's canceling. And I think then the rest of the language I don't have in my division.
Mr. Chairman, for this article, could I go back to page 56? I missed an item.
Page 56 and
item is Section 39. It's on the Senate side. It deals with Itasca County infrastructure. And that's the exact same language that's in the bonding bill.
Okay. Well, we're on the bonding bill. I was reminded that if we do in this bill amend certain items, it could require 81 votes when the bill goes back. Mm-hmm. So we should be careful what we do with some of that bonding language.
I don't need any of it. It should be able to get 80.
Mr. Chair.
Especially if it's already enacted in the bonding.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Representative Rukavina. I was going through an item caught my eye in the old language on page 71, R71. And it was $10,000 for a study on ways to promote employment opportunities for people of color, especially African Americans. I'm wondering if you ever got the study.
That is the Department of Employment and Economic Development asked for an extension on that.
Say it again?
They asked for an extension on the report, so we haven't. Deed is here, but.
Representative Rukavina, we're having trouble hearing you.
The Department of Employment and Economic Development did not meet the January, or they asked for an extension on it, so they didn't meet the January date, and I don't know yet if we've gotten it. No, we haven't gotten it.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rukavina, do you know about when they think they could have had it done?
I see Ms. Batts is here, so maybe she, Mr. Chair, can answer that question.
If you could identify yourself for the record.
My name is Lynn Batsley. I'm the legislative director at DEED. And we sent a letter of apology to Senator Tomasoni and to Representative Rukavina. It was more in depth than the time we had. We worked with Representative Mullery, and he was okay with the extension. And my knowledge of it right now, it is with our people that do the final editing. So that's where we are, and I do apologize that we are late.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Rukavina, anything else?
Mr. Chair, I'll just have Ms. Newman take the parts.
Excuse me, I should have asked. Were you done then, Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chair,
After you reverted us back, you were.
That first article, yes.
You're all set with that one.
Ms. Newman's going to take
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, page R80, the Historical Society riders, the House has language that the Sesquicentennial Commission is encouraged to solicit and select a state song. Representative Erdahl felt very strongly about that. Section 6 adds the Director of Explore Minnesota Tourism to the list of public officials in statute. Page R81, Section 7 is language. The new language is actually on page R83, and it's the same in both bills where the Snowbait, the film and TV production cost credit can be up to 20% of film production costs for a film that incurs cost of more than $5 million in the state within a 12-month period. Currently, that credit is 15% in general law. Section 8 you've heard about is the vacation rental lodging study. And then on page R83, Article 17, it's the same language regarding the debt ceiling in housing.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, on the Senate side, on page R79, the Senate is proposing $2.15 million of grant money to the Minnesota Film and TV Board for the jobs production program. And we have the same transfer language of $500,000 that the House does. And we have the same language to use the money at, to get 20% above the $5 million cost. The Minnesota Historical Society, the Senate has $500,000 in the first year so that they could use money before July 1st. And we also extend that until June 30th, 2009, for wrapping up the sesquicentennial operation. The Senate also makes a general reduction there of $200,000 from the society from among its various operations. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the document through R83, the House and the Senate are the same except for the vacation rental lodging study, but the housing finance debt service is the same. Debt ceiling, excuse me.
Okay. You're all set? Senator Tomasoni?
Well, I'm encouraged to see that we're going to pick a state song because we might want to include a state sport, too. You never know.
So. Well, we talked about that earlier. Let me join you on that if I get lobbied by a certain grandson.
Give me his number. Give me his number.
Oh, okay. Well, he probably would. Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, I'm a little confused about the language about a state song because we already have a state song. Mm-hmm. It's Hail to Hail Minnesota.
Well, I don't know if that's – is that officially the state song?
It's in the blue book.
I think so.
It's in the book as an official state song.
But was it? Yes. No, it was a
if it's not, it's certainly generally accepted as –
it's always been my understanding it's in the blue book. From the time I was an early member of our 4-H club, I learned it as the state song.
Well, I think we all did, and you're probably right. So then what do we have, two?
Mr. Chairman, it's in your bill. I'm looking for.
No, I'm just saying that rhetorically. Can anybody enlighten us on the state song issue?
Ms. Newman said that our state song is currently by resolution and not by statute. So,
okay, that's the difference then. Okay.
So we can fix that. Mr. Chairman.
So does that mean it's still an open question as to what it might be?
Mr. Chairman, the Senate, we're big on custom and usage and tradition, so.
Well, we argue custom and usage on the House side as well. So,
tell where the state's part.
State birds, state butterflies.
My Senate counterpart, I think we're near done, but the question that we need to announce is our next meeting. And Senator Cohen and I were having a conversation, and he was going to check on something.
Mr. Chair, you could check on the state song with the Sheet Music Museum.
That's right.
Chatfield.
It's not getting any money.
And we were down there. We were able to visit that facility. And
they would have the information.
Yeah. Quite frankly, I think it was greatly misunderstood as to that as a valuable asset to the state, actually the country, when they talked about the inquiries they received and the lack of any climatic control. And
Mr. Chair, I heard a rumor they closed this morning, but it's just a rumor. I don't know.
Who closed this morning?
But a lot of valuable material there that's just stored, unfortunately, in boxes and what have you. We were waiting for your return.
I'm sorry. I was talking.
We're about to adjourn, and you're the chair tomorrow. Or at our next meeting, we did talk a little bit about tomorrow morning. Would that work?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I had to talk to the senior member of the range delegation for a few minutes.
About tomorrow morning?
No, just about things in general.
I'm here, Senator Cohen.
I'm sorry. I thought Senator Bach was the.
No, he's
senior. He's not the. Oh, I'm so terrible.
He's the tax chair.
He actually has less seniority than Senator Tomasoni, if you senators would keep remembering that. So.
Well, you know, I look at seniority from the standpoint of the entire legislature.
And to my left is number one.
Pardon?
Number one to my left, right?
Well, I'm tied with one other on the House side, and then if we count Senator Berglund's House time as well as Senate time, she would also be tied with us, but that might be a debatable point whether you count both House and Senate.
Mr. Chairman, relative to our schedule,
on that point of seniority?
No. Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins did some research And here's what it says about state song and state symbols. Hail Minnesota, written by Mr. Truman E. Ricard in 1904, music and first verse, and Arthur E. Upson, second verse, was adopted as a state song in 1945. The University of Minnesota Alumni Association, owner of the copyright to the song, released its copyright to the words and music for the purpose of permitting the legislature to adopt it as a state song.
And I think the question, though, that was that it was then done by resolution and not statute. So that, I suppose, if you want to make it permanent, you'd have to do it in statute. And
Mr. Chair,
I didn't track that
are amendments
language.
Appropriate at this time? Or I would like to move that the Chisholm fight song be.
We could use right with the law.
Just get the state of
we could have each
song.
Region of the state have their own regional song. But going back about, I'm getting kind of hungry and I didn't have supper yet. I had an energy bar at this point. Next meeting, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm informed. I think we probably need to have the Finance Committee meeting tomorrow morning. We've postponed this meeting several times, or the agenda a number of times. And so I'm told we probably need to meet. I understand that you're doing the
healthcare
bill, and so you'll be done with that in about, what, half hour, 45 minutes?
I'm sure.
Before midnight.
With the first speech, maybe.
So that raises the question of our schedule for tomorrow. Would anybody have – we have session, but it's not – Senator Betzold, it's not a lengthy session?
There's like a dozen bills, Mr. Chair.
A couple of them controversial.
Two of them mine.
Okay.
We go in at 11, Senator Cohen, and it's really – I'm sure it'll be lengthy. It's a little hard to predict whether we would be adjourned, you know, at a time certain, obviously, to set up a meeting. There would be a couple of options. We could schedule a meeting to the call of the chair, which it's you tomorrow. And if the House session got too long and drawn out where it just didn't get practical to meet, then announce that we would not be meeting tomorrow, but we could leave it open in that regard.
If I could inquire of staff, where are we with the spreadsheets and the side-by-sides? We have K-12 ready?
K-12 is ready.
And higher ed's ready. How about human services?
Can't have human services if we're having health care up on the floor.
Okay, Mr. Mossman says about midday tomorrow for human services. Could we try to meet at the end of the day tomorrow and do K-12, E-12, and higher education? Higher education, Representative Rukavina, should not take a long time, I don't think. Actually, should and K-12 shouldn't either. And see if human services is ready and try to get us – depending on the House floor session. If you're going to 11 o'clock tomorrow night. But
yeah, that's what I was – you could always announce then that the meeting is canceled if it got too late, but we could just simply announce that we would be meeting, let's say, a half hour after the House adjourns.
Okay, let's try that.
Then watch for any notices relative to if the House is running late where it just wouldn't be practical, then we would reschedule that meeting to Friday if the House ran late.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you can probably just figure out right now that if there's a certain time period, you know, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, whatever, that and the House is still going, you know, we can just decide right now we're not going to meet if we're at that point.
Yeah, and Senator Betzold, that's essentially what I was saying. We would announce that.
But I mean, if you can decide right now that there's a certain time that if we go beyond it, so at least people can, you know, plan accordingly and not have to just, you know, watch the session and wait for some announcement that there's not going to be a meeting. So,
we could do that where we just would say after the session, but no later than, as I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah. No later than 7, 8, I don't know.
Well, that's fine with me.
Do we have a time then?
You get to pick. You're the
pick
chair.
One, yeah.
Well,
you're
Let's wait till tomorrow.
Here's what I would suggest. I think if it got beyond, if the House session got beyond, let's throw a time out there. 8 o'clock.
Six.
If we aren't adjourned by 8 o'clock, we wouldn't meet tomorrow.
8 o'clock, does that make
and
sense?
That would give us probably a couple of hours if we did. If it, let's say it ran up to 8, we could then meet until, you know, 10 or so, take care of a couple of those sections.
Well, Mr. Chair, would it be possible, given what, you know, the debates in the House and the length between the actual debates and a vote, that we could meet while the House is in session, which we have done with fiscal bills before, because... You know, I mean, sometimes...
We haven't talked about that yet, but perhaps in Rukavina, that's what we've done in the past, and that was one of the reasons that I recommended using this room, so that we would be in close proximity to both chambers if we met during session.
Mr. Chairman, that's a call for you and your conferees, because the assumption is the House session will be the session for a lengthier period of time, so that's your call.
Mr. Chair, we could probably get a few of those sections done while the health care debate's going on.
We could do the health care section.
We could probably finish that, too, yeah. So I just a suggestion.
Actually, that raises...
What time would you folks be done?
I'm not sure what's on the calendar tomorrow, so...
I don't like that. Then we miss the gotcha amendments.
Well, we can't do the service session.
I don't think we can miss tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's gestational care, manufactured.
We wouldn't do human services. We would do education.
Mr. Chair, I don't think tomorrow is the day that we can just give up.
You know, that's a pretty big bill. We haven't. I think I like the idea that Senator Fredrickson suggested, if that's all right with our chair for tomorrow, that we meet 30 minutes after the House adjourns, but no later than 8 o'clock.
Great idea. Well, what a smart guy. He suggested it to me. So it was really
there are probably going to be some amendments and so up. That's going to be a pretty high profile bill.
Really? Amendments?
We would probably want to be there to know what those amendments are dealing with. So that would be my suggestion, if it's all right with my co-chair or the chair tomorrow.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and Senate conferees, so we'll meet one half hour after the House adjourns, or no later.